All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 2 in this Ancient History program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. We are returning to our theme, Where Am I? And in particular, of course, we are interested to know, what does history have to say about this important question? This formative question, as we used the expression yesterday, for human beings. This question that shapes us and our lives. And so we'll talk today about the different subjects that we study and maybe give you a little bit of an insight into how they work together, and in particular, what the unique contribution of history is to helping you understand the world that you live in. We'll start to explore that in particular. So I asked you guys yesterday to think about the subjects that you're studying, and to think about, well, okay, what is it that they contribute to your awareness of the world? Which is maybe a little bit of a different way of thinking about it than you might be used to. You might be used to thinking of well, okay, what good is X, or what is X useful for, as opposed to something else, or what have you, right? Or what is this subject, good for, or that sort of thing. You might not have thought of it in terms of, okay, what does this teach me about where I am? Which is kind of the take that I wanted to encourage you to have. So that might be kind of a new slant on it. So let's talk about the different subjects that we have and what they contribute to our awareness of the world that we live in, and take it from that angle. See if we can express it in those terms. And I think that will be a productive theme to kind of pursue here for you guys. Because especially, I think, at this level, we'll probably have some interesting discussions, because you guys are at that age. There's an age range here, of course, but you're at that age where you have the ability, and I've noticed it already in the exchanges that we've had, you have the ability to start to take on more ambitious thoughts. You have this capacity to interrogate the world that you live in with a little bit more incisive thinking, with a little bit more penetration, and you are interested in getting some better answers than you've had before. I think instinctively, if not explicitly, you know that you are getting closer and closer to being out there in the world on your own. And you need to get ready for that. On the one hand, you've got skills that you need to develop, and some of you, you know, address that in your answers. So, you know, nowadays, for instance, an indispensable skill set is the ability to type. All right, so you're going to need to develop that skill set, and you need the ability to drive and certain things like that are skill sets. Okay, that's all fine. But there's obviously more to it. And you can sense that. You can sense that there is a world of amazing possibilities out there. And you live in a mostly free society where, to a pretty great extent, you have the ability to define the path that you're going to take in life and make it happen. Even in some cases, absolutely from scratch. And we're going to get into that today as well, about, you know, having that mindset and that ability to imagine things beyond what's right in front of you. Be a creative person, be a person who can kind of embrace possibilities that others are not aware of, and get the most out of life. So I'm sure you are contending with some of these themes. You might not realize it. You might not have stated it in words, but that's part of my job as a teacher, as an educator, is to help you name things that are happening in your life, in your world, help you focus on those things, help you bring them into focus and see them more clearly. and think about them and expand your awareness of what is possible out there and put you in a position to have the best life that you can have. So I chose to be a history teacher because I am convinced that of all the subjects that we have, history is probably the, I mean, my personal evaluation is that history is the most important one, especially in our current context where it is so neglected and so poorly understood. And we live in a society that is missing this ingredient in its culture. And you can see the damage that it does, that you can see how people are walking around without a certain awareness, without a certain empowerment, and what it's like to be that. It's quite painful, actually. People don't even know what they don't know, but they feel the pain of it, and it's hard to navigate through life without understanding the world you live in. And so that's going to be the theme here that we pursue, is what is history going to be able to contribute to our awareness? What is it going to be able to give us that we can't get? Literally, we cannot get it except through history. There's nothing else that can do it for us. And just how powerful is it? I think that, quite frankly, it's with very, very rare exceptions, people have ever understood how powerful it can be. But I'm convinced that it is, and I'll do my best to show it to you. Okay, so with that introduction, let's, as a kind of warm-up exercise, to get our motor revving here a little bit, let's talk about some easy things and what they help us to understand about the world that we live in, what they tell us about where we are. So, again, you might not have formulated the thought this way, but let's talk about so-called language arts, right? So I think a few of the answers that were sent in had to do with that. I'm thinking specifically about things like spelling and vocabulary and grammar. Probably, I don't know, by a show of hands, who loves those subjects? Anybody? Things like spelling, vocabulary, grammar? I'm not surprised. There was one vote, maybe, okay, two votes. Timothy says, right, okay, so nah, they are not particularly beloved subjects, but these are absolutely indispensable subjects. Why? What are they about? What are these so-called language arts about? What do they teach us about the world that we live in? Again, try to formulate it in that way. What does spelling tell me about where I am? What does vocabulary tell me about the world? Does it do something like that, or no? How would you tackle that, Keen?
Well, these things they all help us communicate more effectively, and the world that we live in. As long as you know, throughout history and even into prehistory, communication has been probably the most important thing that human beings have been able to do. If we can't communicate with each other, we cannot do anything that requires collaboration, and that is how everything great is accomplished. So if we can't communicate, we can't do great things. Our world values communication.
Okay, so I like what you're trying to do there, because, again, this formulation that I'm using might be a little bit hard to adopt. And you said, okay, we can't communicate without being able to express our ideas, right? Okay, so in other words, these language arts help us to understand that we live in a world of communication. We live in a world, we as human beings are beings that need to communicate, right? This is absolutely true. Your point is absolutely true, that if we can't do that, we can't achieve all of the values that are required, that are possible in a social system, right? So, exactly. Human beings are definitely social animals. But I'm going to go one step more fundamental, because something comes before communication. What is it? More fundamental, more important. Because you can't communicate unless you can do this other thing first. And you can't do this thing unless you have the building blocks for it. Which is what, Abby?
Well, to communicate, you have to speak.
You have to be able to speak. Okay, you're using words, but words express ideas. What's the fundamental? What do we need words for? More before we even communicate. What's that thing you've got to be able to do before you express the thought that is the outcome? Juliet?
You need to be able to think.
Think! Absolutely! Exactly. Language is a code of symbols for thinking, above all. And then all the rest follows from there. So somebody wrote, human beings are social creatures. That's true, but more fundamentally, as the Greeks understood, and we'll talk about them this year, man is the rational animal, said Aristotle, which applies equally to women, of course. So that means we think. That's what we can do. We live in a world that is clearly the product of the thinking and actions of human beings. So spelling, vocabulary, grammar, I mean, those are the fundamentals, right? If you can't formulate clear thoughts, then basically you're stuck. And we'll talk about that more in terms of history. But just for fun, right? What is the value of being able to spell properly? Just for fun. Abby, how do you like this one?
Well, that sign, it says private customer parking only, all others will be towed, but towed is spelled like a toe, as in like a frog and a toad.
Yeah, okay. So, right? I mean, this is just a humorous example, okay? Right? But, of course, this is very, very poor communication, right? And so, here's somebody that knows how to spell toad, but again, you do not want to be communicating this idea. Why? Right? What is your incorrect thinking and clarity, right, Timothy? What's wrong with this? What's so funny about this?
Well, it says violators will be towed and fined $50, but fined is spelled like you find something on the ground.
Right, so it's actually a feature of violation, right? So if you decide to break the rules, you're going to get $50. Hey, that's pretty good. All right, so anyway, just humorous examples. These people obviously need an English tutor. So be careful. I don't think this person's going to get a lot of work. So, you know, I mean, these are humorous examples, right? These are what we call memes nowadays. If you're on Facebook, people like to post these cute things and just to make fun. Okay, but the point is real, right? And the point is actually much, much more important if you are trying to express real thoughts and you run up against the limitation of not being able to use the building blocks of knowledge, right? So try to imagine Mr. Powell explaining history to you. I mean, today already, what strange vocabulary words did I use, which if I did not have access to, would simply make the lesson here completely impossible to relate, right? So if Mr. Powell didn't have the building blocks of knowledge, then, well, I would be trying to tell you, you know, history is like a good thing that helps us know about old stuff, you know, and so things, you know, from before, which is nice, right? Which is good. And it won't be long before I don't have too many history, you know, people buy stuff from me, history stuff. So, right? I need words. I need to be able to have certain clear thoughts and be able then to communicate them to you. So this is perhaps obvious. But it's surprising, in some ways, taken for granted as well. But that's kind of my point here today, is in some regards, some of these things that we learn about, we take them for granted, and we shouldn't. Because there's an element of motivation that we deny ourselves if we don't identify. And I think that a lot of people don't like these subjects. I certainly didn't like them very much when I was younger, but I wish my teachers had been able to express to me what the purpose is, rather than just, well, it's something you have to learn, right? And everybody knows it or whatever. Some of these basic answers that people try to give are really not satisfying. And I think you know that and feel that about whatever subject it is that you are the least motivated concerning. If you look at the root of that, you will probably find that you just don't get why it matters, or you're not convinced that it matters. And if somebody could articulate that for you, you might be able to really have a greater passion for it. This one I like because it shows you the value of grammar. This is probably the most classic meme concerning the value of grammar, right? So it's not an issue of spelling. But anyway, just a humorous example, right? Commas matter. Abby, go ahead.
When you say let's eat, comma, grandma, then that sounds like let's eat, grandma. So you're asking grandma to
join you in eating, right?
When you take out the comma, let's eat, grandma. You want to eat.
Oh my gosh, yes, right. And we live in a world of zombie movies, so that has an even worse connotation nowadays. So anyway, just to be humorous. Now, of course, grammar is an art, and the use of language is an art. And so you have to learn this process gradually over time and not get too ridiculous about it. Because, for instance, this is my favorite example of grammar gone too far, right? And so ending a sentence with a preposition is something up with which I will not put, right? So famous grammar joke of taking grammar too far. In fact, you can end the sentence with a preposition, and it's not that big of a deal typically. And if you take it too far, then, well, you end up kind of sounding kind of ridiculous, right? And so yeah, language is an art. Thinking is an art. You need to have these building blocks in order to be able to pull it off. And of course, if you can't do it, if you fail to learn sufficiently these building blocks and to learn the art of language, then what is the outcome there? What I think you guys are probably already in a position to be able to say this. I'm going to develop this theme over the course of the lecture here, but again, I already gave you the example of Mr. Powell without vocabulary. What's the problem if you don't learn these things? Where do you end up as a person, or what do you encounter as a person if you fail to become educated, Abby?
Well, you end up in a place with a very bad job that doesn't pay a lot of money because you don't know much of anything. You're not educated, and so you end up with a bad job.
Right, certainly. So your job or your career prospects are one expression of the thing that I'm trying to draw out here as a general theme for today. But there's a little bit more to it. So keep that one in mind, because your answer is a good one, Abby, that there is a kind of a pragmatic value to all of this. What kind of job, what kind of pay are you going to have, and so on. And it's certainly an aspect of it. But there is more to it. So let's pursue that a little bit. I think then that's a good point to transition here to, well, okay, we have vocabulary, we have spelling, we have grammar and all that. Okay, but where's the real payoff? What's the subject that you've got to study Once you've studied those building blocks, what's next in the hierarchy of building up this crucial understanding of the world? What do you have to be able to do once you've got those building blocks? What's next? Juliet?
You have to be able to put them together.
In the art of writing, absolutely. Absolutely. A crucial subject, an indispensable subject, is writing. And as human beings, this is basically the cutoff point for whether or not human beings can achieve anything noteworthy in the universe. And history is the absolute proof of that. Because all societies that have existed in the past that failed to achieve writing, guess what we know about them? Guess what they have passed on to us? Abby, go ahead.
Almost nothing.
Yeah, pretty much nothing. And our ability to absorb and understand what they did is pretty much zero as well if we can't write, if we are not literate. Right, so reading and writing. But of course, reading and writing, these arts of language go beyond sentences, go beyond just combining words into a sentence, right? King was talking earlier about communication. And I pointed out more fundamentally, thinking. Thinking does not happen in little bits, little sentences and little atoms of separate from each other. If you're going to have any significant thoughts and you are going to communicate any significant thoughts, what do you have to be able to do? Juliet said exactly right, or was Abby? Abby, go ahead.
You have to be able to write, to communicate with people, to speak.
Yeah, and in all these cases, what we're talking about here is combining or integrating the building blocks of language and thought into significant thoughts, right? Interesting thoughts, inspiring thoughts, right? These things don't just, you can't conjure these things out of single sentences. I mean, very rarely. Sometimes, right? They're a slogan or a title of something, this or that can be exciting. But really, why are those things exciting? Because of the thought that they embody. And that is inevitably some larger thing. Right, so we're talking about the art of writing, and so that includes things like nonfiction, of course. So you're communicating technical knowledge or factual knowledge. But on the other hand, there's also the art of fiction. I hope you are able to enjoy literature as a part of your curriculum as well. This is another one of the things that we have a lot of trouble with nowadays. Literature is definitely in a pretty sorry state in the culture, especially in the form of movies. It is absolutely, there's never been a worse time in terms of the quality of the movies out there. They're really, really typically pretty despicable or thoughtless or classless. It's really not a great time for literature. But there is great literature out there. What's it worth to us? Think about the your favorite work of literature, if you wouldn't mind sharing. Think about it and what is it good for? Or if you can do it, what does it teach you about where you are? Why is it your favorite, right? Because why is it so valuable to you? It's telling you in your life right now, hopefully, have some inspiration from some kind of work of literature. And it's telling you something about your life. That's why it's important to you. Your values come from feeling connected to something. What's a good example? What are examples in your life? Timothy.
I think my favorite work of literature would be the Percy Jackson series. And okay. I think it's because it combines the old Greek and Roman history, but with events in the present.
Okay, right, all right. So what do you feel that is, why is that so much fun? Why do you like that so much?
I don't know. I think it's because I like the idea of, like, the ancient gods still existing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And being in the present. I think that's a cool concept.
Okay. It's very spectacular. It's very fantastic, right? It's fantasy. So let's talk about that. What's the value of fantasy? Because absolutely a crucial human value. Don't have it? Oh my gosh, I feel sorry for you, right? Kenny, what's the value of fantasy?
It can teach you lessons.
Okay.
It can be very thought-provoking.
Okay, right? So in some cases, fantasy is an opportunity to kind of think things through that you don't see around you in the world, and the story captures an idea or a theme, right? And so you can learn more, even though it's creative, right? Even though it didn't come from something factual. Okay, but there's another element to it, about the ability to fantasize. And the ability to use your imagination. What's that about? Why is that so great? It's such a crucial thing in our lives. Timothy?
I think fantasy allows you to think deeper because it would be something that doesn't actually exist. But in your mind, it does exist, and that helps you think.
I completely agree. So in other words, doesn't this sound like a fantastic thought by itself? Great, great, great point, Timothy. So I agree that the ability to fantasize increases your ability to think. Now that seems kind of unlikely in the sense that, well, fantasy is unreal. Thinking means identifying reality. So how does that happen? How can you combine the two? Do they really? You know, wouldn't one be a distraction from the other or tend to take you away from reality? Shouldn't we maybe discourage fantasy, Juliet?
I don't think so. I think it gives us a parallel to our world in a way which fact can, but it can't in a way. I think fantasy rings truer to many people, and it's better in a way.
Okay, right. So actually, yes, that's true. It's, in some regards, when an author, a creative author, thinks really clearly about something and creates a work of art for us to look at, then, yeah, it can, as you say, ring truer to us than the events around us. And that's a really fascinating outcome and absolutely true as well. And that's because we as human beings think thoughts are able to project things that are more than what's right in front of us. We're getting closer and closer to talking about history here, right? More than what's right in front of us. Oftentimes, the reality of what's right in front of us, well, something might be in front of us and it's real enough, but it doesn't feel important. Right? So we got to judge the value of the things that are in front of us. How do we do that? Right? We got to combine what we're seeing with, well, everything else that we know. How do we do that? How do our minds work to combine things? That's exactly what imagination is. Combining things in our head in new and unanticipated ways, not logical ways, but strange ways. You know, when we dream or if we daydream, it's pretty much the same thing. Our minds are these amazing devices that allow us to do that. And I mean, this is the heart of invention. Everything that we have around us I'm sure everybody here is quite clear on the fact that, yes, okay, we need science and technology and engineering, right? Everybody's talking these days about what's called STEM. And that seems to be the focus very often nowadays when it comes to education. Okay, but how do technologies get created? There's no manual for that. They have to be invented first. And the people who invent those things have to have this capacity for imagining something that doesn't exist now. And then, okay, let's see if we can use science to make it real. Right? So I'm thinking about the blue marble yesterday and about the ability to imagine a world, right, beyond the blue marble and to go there. You know, we need science and technology. If you want to be an astronaut, yeah, of course you need math. Okay? But look at this. It was over 100 years ago that, I don't know if you're familiar with this story, that Jules Verne wrote the book From the Earth to the Moon. And he imagined it possible to shoot human beings off the face of the earth using a really big gun, and get them all the way to the moon. And so he imagined space travel. And, well, somebody's got to imagine it first, right? Somebody's got to have a mind that it doesn't accept the limitations of living on earth. It says, okay, imagine if we could get off the planet. Imagine if we could go to the moon. And, well, that's the spark. It took a long time for human beings to figure out how. They had to build rockets and so on. And that took a combination of things, right? But first you've got to have this value. And if not, what are you stuck on? Right? Without this power, let's see if you can combine this now with what we were saying earlier, Abby. You were saying, well, if you don't have the ability to, you know, communicate thoughts properly thanks to spelling and grammar and writing and so on, okay, then maybe you can't have a good job. You're kind of stuck in some kind of low-end, low-income job, a very uninspiring type of work. Okay, if you don't have the power of imagination and the power of science and technology, where are you stuck? Literally. And what predicament are you in as a human being? Can you guys detect the common denominator there? Being stuck? Yes, Zen. Yeah, Nemo. Speak up, Nemo.
The limits.
Okay, meaning? Explain, elaborate a little bit. Limits to what?
The way you can achieve things.
Ooh, nicely put. Limits to what you can think. Limits to what you can do. Limits to your life. And, well, that's sad. Human beings have been stuck on Earth for so many countless generations, not being able to feed themselves properly. That's one heck of a way to be stuck. There are still, I don't know how many countless millions of people on Earth living in poverty. They haven't been able to figure out how to stop doing it. What kind of limits are holding you back? And what limits do you not even know about? The whole point of all these subjects that you're studying is to break through these limits for you. And that's, I think, a crucial thing for you to understand and to try to embrace for yourself, that what you're trying to do by educating yourself is to open up as many possibilities for yourself in the world. Primarily by opening up, breaking past the limits of what you are able to think and communicate. Now, that doesn't mean that there's any obligation to go and become an astronaut. That doesn't mean that there's any obligation to do anything in particular. But it's about what is possible for you. and how wondrous and exciting life can be for you. Because there is a lot more out there than most people realize, and if all you can see is what's in front of you, then you're stuck there. You really are stuck there. Let's transfer that theme to history. How does that theme port over to history? What is the limitation, in a very normal sense of thinking about history? History is about the past, right? Okay, we're learning about things that happened in the past. Sticking with this theme of you are, if you don't have these types of knowledge, if you don't study these subjects, if you don't acquire these abilities, you're stuck somewhere. If you don't have history, where are you stuck? What are the limits that you face? Which are the limits that people have now? I'll give you an example, a very dramatic example right now. What limits do you encounter? What is it about the world that where are you stuck? Nemo?
You don't know much about how the world around you came to be if you don't know what happened in the past.
True enough. So what is it that you can only see? If you can't see the past, what are you stuck with? What's the key word that I'm looking for? Callie, can you think of the word? If you can't see the past, what are you stuck looking at?
The future, the present?
Well, I don't know how much of the future you can see, right? But yeah, the only thing that's left is the present. And you might be able to imagine the future. Hopefully, if you've studied some literature, you can imagine. But on what basis, right? You're stuck in the present if you don't have history. You can't summon more than what's in front of you. And that is very limiting. That is very limiting. I'm going to give you an example that's quite dramatic right now about, and we'll talk about this more probably in the next class. Okay? So here you live in the present. And an example of things that people study in the present, all too often disconnected from the past, is civics. I don't know if you have a class or some resource in homeschooling about civics, and in particular, of course, a modern day obsession is with voting, right? And in the United States, there will be a vote, a presidential vote coming up pretty soon, right? And if, unless you are totally ignoring it and ignoring the things that your parents talk about, you've got to be aware, that there is an election coming up and that various people are starting to, you know, present themselves and trying to be the candidate for this or that political party and stuff like that, right? So this is something that happens. And in the present, people are taught in civics, you know, that what voting is and how you do it taught different things about it. Okay. Well, so what when it comes to voting? Now, people vote. Is it important for people to vote? Does it matter if people vote? I'll let you just, you will almost undoubtedly have an answer for yourself right now. Okay? And if you live in today's society, then your answer is going to be yes. Right? Because that's what we're taught in civics and so on. Okay. Well, here's an interesting fact. The people of Greece are going to vote pretty soon too. And this will be a new vote after another round of voting and after voting that came before and voting and so on. And if you know anything about the world that you live in right now, those poor people in Greece are going to live miserably for at least another generation. And it doesn't matter what they vote. It doesn't matter who they vote for. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at all. And they're going to try to vote for somebody else who's going to do something else, and it won't matter. And they've been struggling with this problem now for the past generation already, maybe not quite that long, but they will continue to struggle. And right now, voting doesn't matter one bit in Greece. That, in case you didn't know, is where they invented democracy. In ancient times, as we'll study this year. And yet right now, I'll tell you flat out, it doesn't matter what the Greeks vote. They don't have a hope. They are in a miserable state of affairs, and voting doesn't matter. There's nothing you can do about it because their country is completely bankrupt. And you can't vote yourself out of bankruptcy. And you can't pretend by voting, and there's nothing you can do. So, does voting matter? I would say that in the upcoming American election, yes, voting matters. And yet I would tell you that in the upcoming Greek election, voting doesn't matter. So, which is it? How do you know the difference? And you've got to find out what voting is and what it can and can't do. And how do you know that? No better way than through history. Because voting was invented a long, long time ago. And in some cases, it produced some pretty nice results. And in other cases, it was a total disaster. And if you don't want to be stuck in one situation, again, being stuck, right? If you would rather be able to have a significant vote for, if you'd rather be able to actually help your society go in the right direction and so on, how are you going to know? Which situation are you in? Is it possible for America to get to where Greece is today? Where basically it doesn't matter who you vote for. There's nothing you can do. Your society is going to be unfixable for an entire generation at best. Is it possible for that to happen to America? America is by far the greatest country that has ever existed. Can it happen? To the greatest country in the world? Yes, it can. You can learn that from history as well. Sadly, it can happen. Have you ever heard of the Romans? We'll study them. They had the greatest civilization in the world at one point, and it no longer exists. So, yes, things happen to us human beings here in the world in absolutely fascinating ways. And we want to be able to not be in some situations and be able to enjoy others and benefit from things and know the difference. And there's really only one way to know that. To break through the limitations of just being in the present. To be empowered to see more than what's just in front of us. To be able to see the past and summon it in our thinking. That is a power that only history can give us. Of course, we don't want to learn things about the past that don't have anything to do with us, because there's a lot of that. So we've got to be really, really careful in how we approach it. Because there's more in the past than you could possibly make use of. So we have to be very careful of how we summon the past. So this year in particular, we're going to be studying ancient history. Well, how do we know that we're not wasting our time? And this is the challenge. How do we learn from mistakes, as Kenny is saying we need to do? Right? What's the method for studying the past that we need in order to get the most out of it? In order for it to show us more about the world we live in. To tell us more about where we are and what we should do in this world. How we can live, what we can do, how we can make the best life for ourselves. There's a lot to be learned from history in that regard. So tomorrow, that of course is going to be our main purpose. We have a lot of different subjects to learn. And hopefully just adopting this perspective will be valuable for you. To challenge yourself to say, okay, what's the value of this or that to me? How can it help me to understand my world better than I do now? What limits am I going to be able to break through if I possess a certain knowledge? How can my life be better if I know this versus not knowing it? And so on. Try to adopt that perspective when you are studying I think you'll find that with all of the fundamentals, writing, literature, history, science, of course, you'll be able to find a good answer to those things. And it can help you. It can help you to be motivated to pursue those subjects. And that's kind of my purpose, especially, of course, with regard to history, is to break through the perception that most people have that the past is separate from the present, that the past is gone and doesn't have anything to do with us here and now. I think that is a terrible mistake. And if we can learn to see the past as a tool for knowing more about the world in front of us, then we'll learn to love the past. I certainly do. So we'll talk tomorrow more in detail about hopefully what we can do to make that happen. And then, of course, we will dive into it and actually get into some of the details and see what we can see. Okay, folks, thank you for sharing your thoughts. I appreciated your contributions. Very interesting insights that you had. And I look forward to picking things up tomorrow. Thanks. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.